Want to know the will of God? Ask the right question. This is the Looking for More podcast, connecting Christians who feel disconnected from the church, with your host, Shirley DeMerchant, blogger, preacher, writer, and not a bad line dancer, if she sticks to the basics. This is episode number 8. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. This is the first day of November, and November every year is National Podcast Month, or the NAPODPOMO. I am participating in this challenge for the month of November to produce 30 podcasts. That is one podcast per day. So this is the first of that series. When we think about Christians feeling disconnected from the church, there are many reasons. I think one reason is that often we have too narrow of a focus on ourselves. We don't think of the big picture. One area where I believe this is quite clear is when we are seeking to understand and know God's will for our lives. The most common question that people ask when seeking to know God's will is, what's God's will for my life? It's a question that many people ask, and I've asked it too. But as I reflect on that question, I have come to realize that the question is incomplete. The focus is too narrow. I believe a better question is this: what's God's will for my life in light of His will for His people and the world? What's God's will for my life in light of His will for His people and the world? That takes in the big picture. In this second question, our individual lives are an important part of God's will, but they are just part of the puzzle. In the first question, what is God's will for my life? Our lives are the complete puzzle. We are complete in ourselves in considering what God wants with our lives. And I believe that contributes to many problems, including feeling disconnected from the church, because we fail to understand the role of the church in God's will for our lives. I would like to show an example of how knowing and doing God's will requires different things of different people. I'm going to be talking about God's will as revealed in 1 Samuel 15, but mainly in 1 Samuel 16, verses 1 to 13. I'm going to read chapter 16. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you mourn for Saul, since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king." But Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears about it, he will kill me." The Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I have come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what to do. You are to anoint for me the one I indicate." Samuel did what the Lord said. When he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town trembled when they met him. They asked, "Do you come in peace?" Samuel replied, "Yes, in peace. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come to the sacrifice with me." Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab, and had him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, "The Lord has not chosen this one either." Jesse then had Shammah pass by. But Samuel said, "Nor has the Lord chosen this one." Jesse had 7 of his sons pass before Samuel, but Samuel said to him, "The Lord has not chosen these." So he asked Jesse, "Are these all the sons you have?" "There is still the youngest," Jesse answered. "He is tending the sheep." Samuel said, "Send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives." So he sent for him and had him brought in. He was glowing with health and had a fine appearance and handsome features. Then the Lord said, "Rise and anoint him. This is the one." So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. That was 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. To understand this passage, we need to understand what happened just prior to this in 1 Samuel 15. And what we learn from that chapter is that God had a plan. In chapter 15, we learn that Saul has just lost the kingdom. Because of his disobedience to God, God informs him through Samuel that he has rejected him as king. In 1 Samuel 15, verse 23, Samuel said to Saul, "Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you as king." And then in verse 26, Samuel said to him, "You have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you as king over Israel." I like the way the New Living Translation has expressed 1 Samuel 15, verse 28. Samuel said to him, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to someone else, one who is better than you." So God has a plan. That plan is to have a second king, a better king, to rule over his people. When we come to chapter 16 of 1 Samuel, we see 3 key players that God uses in bringing about his will. The first one is Samuel. God revealed his will to his prophet Samuel. Because of his role as prophet, Samuel was responsible to anoint the new king, just as he had anointed Saul. Chapter 16 begins with God giving a clear command to Samuel to go to Bethlehem to anoint one of the sons of Jesse. What's interesting is that God does not tell Samuel which son it is. Samuel knows only enough information to know that his next step was to go to Bethlehem. In verse 2, we find that Samuel is concerned for his own life, and he tells the Lord so, that if he travels to Bethlehem, he has to go right by Saul's territory. Samuel is afraid that when Saul finds out, Saul will kill him. He states that in verse 2. And so the Lord tells Samuel what to do, to take a heifer with him, to prepare to make a sacrifice, and to invite Jesse to attend. Notice that Samuel has not tried to satisfy his curiosity as to who the next king will be. He just asks for information about the next step. Samuel did what the Lord said. So Samuel asks Jesse to have his sons come to him, and each of his sons stands before Samuel. When he saw the oldest son, he was sure that this was God's chosen. That is not surprising, For in that culture, it was usually the oldest son who was shown respect and given extra responsibilities. But God revealed that the oldest son was not the one he had chosen to be the next king. And so Samuel had each of the other brothers stand before him, and each time God said, "This is not the one." When Samuel had the last son standing in front of him, he must have been very confident, thinking, "Well, this is obviously the one that the Lord has chosen." How surprised he must have been when God said, "This is not the one either." I wonder if Samuel thought what I have thought at times, and perhaps you too, that I must have misunderstood God's will. There are no other choices. Where did I go wrong? But then Samuel questioned one of his assumptions. He turned to Jesse and asked if these were all of his sons. And Jesse said, "No, there was one more, the youngest." And then Samuel realized, "I have heard the Lord's voice correctly." So David was sent for. And when he stood before Samuel, God indicated, "This is the one." What we learn from Samuel is this. Sometimes what God requires of us in order to do his will is just to take the next step. Sometimes our part isn't to understand all the details, but to know the next step and do it. It is God's responsibility to show us what he wants us to do. Sometimes I remind God of this, not because he forgets, but sometimes I get antsy because I don't know what the next step is. And that is determined through prayer and seeking God to show us what he wants us to do. In order for Samuel to fulfill God's will, he only needed to obey the next step. The second person I would like us to consider in the fulfilling of God's will to replace King Saul with King David was Jesse. He was the father of 8 sons. When he accepted the invitation by Samuel, he had no idea what Samuel had in mind. It's interesting that when he was asked to bring all his sons before the prophet, he didn't even consider David. We have no idea what Jesse thought when David was anointed by Samuel. I think he likely felt it was an honor for his son to be chosen to be the king. He also would have been surprised that it was not his oldest son, but his youngest. But I think with David being anointed, that Jesse likely had mixed feelings. For Jesse, as the father of the future king, would have to give up his role in David's life as the one that David was to please. Jesse would have to let go of any dreams and plans he had for his youngest son. For now David had a greater role than being the son of Jesse. Jesse found himself in the same role of other parents whose children are called by God. I often think of Zebedee in the Gospels, the father of James and John. His sons joined him in the family business of fishing. And when Jesus called these two brothers to follow him, they left behind their father. It is often difficult to be a parent of someone who is called to serve God in a way that takes them away from the family. Jesse's role in the fulfillment of God's will was to let go of his son and allow him the freedom to fulfill God's will in his life. His role was to relinquish his son. This is so hard for Christian parents, but it should be expected of Christian parents, don't you think? However, I have met many Christians who are involved in the church, who give to the work of the church, who pray for missionaries, but they hold on to their children and they say to God, "Not my children." I know parents who have persuaded their children not to go to seminary, not to go into ministry, not to obey the leading of the Spirit. In fact, I know one person who was told, "Don't marry a minister because you will never have any money." Instead of encouraging their children to seek out God's will and obey, some Christian parents and grandparents tell these children the very same things that non-believing parents would say, like, "Get a good job, go to my alma mater, study something that has a future." Folks, this should not be. This reminds me of an experience I had a few years ago. The Women's Interchurch Council of Canada put on a conference in Winnipeg, Manitoba, on human trafficking. Our main speaker was Joy Smith, a member of Parliament for the province of Manitoba. Joy Smith has been a champion fighter against human trafficking. She is a mother and a grandmother, and her presentation was powerful. It was deeply moving. At the end of her presentation, she had an opportunity for people to ask questions. One woman stepped up to the microphone and explained to Joy Smith that she would really like to be involved in fighting human trafficking, but she was afraid for the safety of her own children. This is how Joy Smith, politician, mother, and grandmother, responded in a controlled and firm voice, "How dare you? How dare you be only concerned about your own children and not the children of others?" You could have heard a pin drop. I want to say to Christian parents and grandparents who stand in the way of their children obeying God's will as God has revealed it to them, how dare you? How dare you come to church on Sunday, read your Bible, pray for missionaries, and then stand between your child and God's will? I urge you, don't say the Lord's Prayer, and particularly the line, "Thy will be done," if you are not prepared to relinquish your children. Christian parents and grandparents, in order to obey God's will, your greatest part at this present time might be to relinquish control over your loved ones and set them free to obey God's will. We've seen the role of Samuel the prophet. His part was to take the next step as God revealed it. Jesse, the father of David, had the role of relinquishing his control as David's father. And the third person, in fulfilling God's will for David to be the second king of Israel, was David himself. Now, at this point in 1 Samuel 16, we really don't know much about David, and I really wish we had a record of his response when Samuel informed him that God had chosen him to be king. If we turn to Psalm 23, we see the faith and the confidence of David in God as his shepherd. But Psalm 23, scholars believe, was written long after this. So, what do we know of David's faith at this time? I believe the best indication is to just go on to the next chapter, 1 Samuel 17, and that is the account of David defeating the giant Goliath. And in that passage, we see his courage as he trusted God, as he stood before this giant. In 1 Samuel 17, verses 45 to 47, David says this to Goliath, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, who you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel." All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. It's no wonder that David was chosen by God to fulfill his purposes as king of Israel. God saw more than a teenage boy. He saw a king. Psalm 79, verses 70 to 71 say this about David and his role. "He chose David, his servant, and took him from the sheep pen. From tending the sheep, he brought him to be the shepherd of his people Jacob, of Israel, his inheritance. And David shepherded them with integrity of heart, with skillful hands he led them." What was David's role in fulfilling God's will? It was submission. Submission to God's will. Even though he had no idea of all the challenges that would lie ahead of him. David's life would not be easy. His rise to the throne would be long and hard. There would be threats to his life. And even as king, he would face many heartaches. David did not know that, but he knew what the Lord wanted, and his response was to surrender. As you've heard the different responses of Samuel and Jesse and David, I would like to ask you, which of these three people do you relate to the most at this point in your life? Do you relate to Samuel, who just needs to know the next step? Or are you like Jesse, that God has placed his hand upon someone you love, and your role is to relinquish control? Or perhaps you are like David. You have heard from the Lord. You know what his will is. It's been confirmed by others. And you wonder what you should do. Your response is to submit to the Lord and to trust him with the outcome. I urge you to consider looking differently at God's will for your life. Ask God to show you how his will for your life fits in with his will for his people and for the world. I believe that when you see it from that perspective, it will be easier to obey God's will as he reveals it to you. Well, it's time to sign off. Thanks for joining me. I share these words and seek to encourage you because I believe that deeper faith leads to greater joy. Talk to you tomorrow.